Most financial advisors follow the industry playbook. Elite advisors choose a different path. I'm Sten Morgan. Welcome to the Elite Financial Advisor Podcast, where top advisors share the strategies, mindsets, and the stories behind building a better business, adding more value, and the courage to grow through resistance. Because becoming an elite advisor is not about working harder and longer. It's about choosing a better path.
There's no other business that's out there that gives away, you know, the thing that they feel is their most valuable thing for free, and then just kind of hopes people pay them for something else. You know, you would never go to, the doctor, and the doctor's like, here, I fixed your broken bone. By the way, let me tell you about, no, that wouldn't work. And the same thing with, a CPA, they're not going to do your tax return for free and then hope you pay them to talk. It's very backwards. Professionals charge for their expertise and time. And how you choose to do that is entirely up to you. You have to view yourself as a professional. If you want to be treated as a professional, then you've got to act like a professional.
Welcome to this episode of the Elite Advisor Podcast. Today we're going to be hanging out with Jeffrey Levine. You've most likely heard some of his content. I really appreciate his technical approach to the business. And I'd never heard his backstory of getting into the industry. And so today, Jeff's going to share his backstory, some of his insights into how to be successful faster, what's the identity of an advisor in the future, his ability to specifically communicate ideas in a process to get people's attention, which is great prospecting advice. So Jeff has some great feedback for us today. Let's jump in.
Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
You bet. So I did not know that your background, you were almost in the medical field. And then something around that saying, hey, I figured the system out and it wasn't where I wanted to be. And it reminded me of the Good Energy book. Have you read that? Casey Means.
I actually have not read that one. No.
Yeah, it's a lot in line with kind of that thing. But I'd love some kind of back history there of that feels like a left turn to get into this business.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where I was really fortunate to be involved in a number of activities that left me very close to physicians while I was in school. And the physicians sort of surprisingly, almost unanimously said, find something else that you love if you can find something else that you love, right? They said, like, if being in medicine is the only thing that make you happy, like, no, nobody's looking to crush dreams here. But it's just not the way it was when they envisioned going into medicine. You know, the idea of like, hey, all we do is, sit and help people. It was, boy, we help people a lot, but man, the insurance company has their thumb on us a lot. And we are told what we can and can't do, or people are stuck with what they can and can't afford because of the insurance industry and the health insurance industry. And they were just really, really unhappy. It really stuck with me because I am in some ways, I'm a huge team believer. I love working in teams, but on the same time, I'm also a little bit of a control freak.
Okay.
And the idea that I might not be able to do what I think would be best for someone to help them get better because of, some person in some desk in some place far away saying, nah, we're not going to pay for that. It really resonated with me. And I was like, I don't think I would be happy in that role. So that was the time where I knew I needed to make a turn. I just had no idea at that point whether it was going to be a right turn, a left turn, a U-turn, whatever it was. I just knew I wasn't going down that path anymore.
When did you feel, because I look back in my career and I felt a similar energy when I got into this business of like sell insurance, manage money at all costs. And I also had this weird feeling of like, is this the business or is there a different path that leads to something that feels a little more true to me? And it took me a while of bouncing around between firms. And then financial planning kind of woke that up into me of like, oh, I can just solve problems. And investments and insurance are part of that. But it took me a while to figure out like, oh, that's not the main thing.
Yeah, I was in a really, I guess, strange and lucky, fortuitous situation. So if if I take a step back here, my mother's the managing partner for Ed Slott and Company, which a lot of people know who Ed Slott is. You know, he's, for those who don't know, he's kind of like the country's guru of IRAs and retirement accounts. Has been that way for, you know, the better part of 30 years or so. A really long history of educating advisors in that area. And when people find that out, the first thing they think is like, oh, you know, he was born to do this. Like, this is what he was always going to do. And it really wasn't like that at all. In fact, you know, my mom is not a technical person in the least. If you ask her even today, you know, being the managing partner of that business for, I don't know, 20, 25 years at this, I don't know, some very long period of time, you know, she'll tell you, I have no idea. Ask my son about these questions. So, but what it did was they were having a conference in Atlanta and they, you know, they asked me to come down and to help with registration. And I was fortunate enough to go down and be sharing my story with someone and kind of got a job offer from someone at that conference who said, look, I know that you've talked about getting into the industry already. By that point, I had dabbled. I had said, you know, will I go into the financial industry? And I started with one of the large, you know, companies that are out there that said they were all about financial planning.
Yeah.
But while they said they were all about financial planning, by the fourth day that I was there, which was one day a week during this early stage, but by the fourth day, so 4 weeks in, it was great. You really seem like you know what you're doing now. Bring a list of 100 people you know next week and let's see how we can help them, which of course was very easy to see through even for a young 20 something year old to be like, so you just want to sell my friends and family a whole bunch of product and then like whatever happens after that, who cares?
Yeah.
And so I was like grossed out, but I was fortunate enough to both have this offer from this conference where an advisor said, hey, why don't you come down and work with me in my practice and be my junior, if you will, so to speak. I work in a CPA firm. We're very consultative. So it was a way for me to get into the business without having to sell. And at the same time, another advisor had taken me with him to a conference that he was invited to. And he said, look, I want you to come to my financial planning conference. And I want you to see people who really view this as a profession, who've done this for years. And I went, and it wasn't all about selling. It was all about, you know, the every breakout or every meeting was like, how do we help people, right? It wasn't the medical help, but it was back to that, like, how do we do good work for people in the way that is going to help them be best? Yeah. And those two things in combination really gave me the start down my financial advisory path.
Nice. With the CPA influence, is that kind of what pulled you into that tax curiosity? Like, where did that come from?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, for me, it was always, I have this unhealthy obsession with having to know it all. And of course, you can't do it, right? You can't know it all. But it was, I'm going to just dive into an area. And I always, you know, I think just from osmosis, the idea of retirement accounts sort of stuck with me, right? Like, in fact, for, I mentioned, I went and I worked as a junior advisor or for some period of time after, as my kind of first job in the business. And it was just be able to learn. Like, this was not like a glorious job offer of here, come down and you're going to start and we're going to elevate you. I took a job for $30,000 doing the most menial work for this advisor. And it was a chance to learn and it was okay. Like, it was an unspoken contract. Like, you're going to do a lot of grunt work and you're going to be able to learn and get licensed and all that sort of stuff. So it that was the role. But after about a year and a half or so, it was kind of clear that, you know, that advisor really needed something else for his practice. And I had sort of bigger aspirations. And so we parted ways and I was introduced just as a conversation with another advisor where that advisor had just written a book, actually. And I was invited to meet the advisor. And I asked him, I said, would you mind if I come to your book signing before we actually meet? I'd love to get a copy of your book and read it and all that sort of stuff. So the book signing happened to be the night before we met. And when I went to the book signing, I took it home. I brought the book back to the house and I read it that night, right? I stayed up all night reading the book and it was an awesome book. But I found what I thought were, you know, three or four esoteric IRA mistakes. So before meeting the advisor the next morning, I picked up the phone, I called Ed, and I said, what do I do? Do I tell this guy who just wrote this really awesome book, I mean, still a book on my bookshelf, mm-hmm. that there are mistakes in this work? And Ed, of course, looked at me and he says, I know this guy for years. There's no mistakes in this book. What do you, you know, you're 20 something like brash young kid thinking you know everything. I said, I'm pretty sure, Ed, can I fax you the pages? And so kind of making a long story short, I faxed him the pages. It was in fact true that there were some errors in there. And that led to Ed sort of thinking like, hey, I'm getting older. Some of the people who work here are getting older. What if we had this young guy come and work with us a little bit and start to really develop his chops? And so he was incredibly kind. He let me sort of start my own business on one hand, but also be working with them at the same time in a full-time capacity. Mm-hmm. And schedule my meetings with clients around everything. It was great because I didn't have to sell anything. Or when I say sell, like I didn't even have to feel like I had to get one client in order to be able to feed my family, right? I had a day job, a salary, yeah. and I was diving into the work there. And then once I felt that I had really, I don't want to say mastered the IRA world, because I even today, I don't feel like I've mastered it. But mm-hmm. When I've gotten as close as I felt I could, I was like, well, I'm kind of bored. What else do I want to learn? And then it was, let me go into Social Security. Yeah. And then I got through that and I was like, what else? And then new laws started coming out. It was like fresh new stuff. Mm. And I realized that while there were others who had been in the business and were specializing in things like IRAs and Social Security and all these things that had been around for a long time that people need to know, they had been doing that a lot longer than me. Every time a new law came out, we were all on the same plane, right? So if I dove in right away, that was going to give me a leg up against the other folks that I was competing with, if you will, in this education space. And I just started doing that and kind of became known for that a little bit with long Twitter breakdowns filled with GIFs and so forth every time a law came out. Sure. And that kind of continues to this day. Anytime something new comes out, I don't need to be first, but I want to be really, really early and really, really good on the breakdown. And that's just what I love.
Love that.
Raise your hand if you've ever been to a financial advisor event that didn't really change you. Maybe the speakers were interesting, maybe you had a few good conversations, but when you got home, nothing about your business actually improved. I've been to a lot of these events over the years, events full of inspiration, but short on practical strategies you can actually use. The advisor of the future knows how to clearly communicate their value, prospect with intention, and deliver financial planning advice clients actually understand. That's why we built How to Charge Live. This isn't an event built around hype or theory. It's an event built for advisors by advisors. 1,000 advisors have attended How to Charge Live, including advisors with more than 20 years of business experience. And over we hear the same thing. This is the best advisor event I've ever attended. I want to personally invite you to join me at my office in Franklin, Tennessee this October for 2 days focused on helping you build more valuable business. I'm going to walk you through my entire process, how to communicate your value well, how to add value through fee-based financial planning, and how to create a framework to help you scale your business faster. Seats are limited, so visit howtochargelive.com to secure your seat now.
When you were talking, the idea of you entering a firm and bringing something new, I talked to a lot of young advisors that, you know, the dream is how do I just enter into a firm, get a mentorship type relationship versus join a big firm, go through the average path, and hopefully I survive 12 months from now. But there's this resistance at times of, hey, no, this is the way we do it. It's kind of working. Let's just keep doing it. Because I'm finding more and more advisors, and this is a lot of stuff we coach on, is like your ability to charge for your time and ideas, like to present yourself in a way to where people see value in just that apart from the product, is a skill set I think that a lot of us lack initially. The industry doesn't give that to us on day one. So trying to coach them on like, how do you bring value on day one? Know that maybe there's a receptance to, hey, bring us, make us better versus, no, you got to come here and do it the way we're doing it. What's your advice to these advisors that can add value on day one, but maybe don't know how to do it?
Well, I think the very first thing is you have to view yourself as a professional. If you want to be treated as a professional, then you've got to act like a professional. And there's no other business that's out there that gives away, you know, the thing that they feel is their most valuable thing for free, and then just kind of hopes people pay them for something else. Yeah. Right. Like, I mean, there are loss leaders out there. I get that. Sure. Like, you can do a loss leader, but it's, you know, you would never go to, you know, the doctor, and the doctor's like, here, I fixed your broken bone. By the way, let me tell you about, like, no, that wouldn't work. And the same thing with, you know, a CPA, they're not going to do your tax return for free and then hope you, you know, you pay them to talk. It's very backwards, right? Professionals charge for their expertise and time, and how you choose to do that is entirely up to you.
Sure.
But you have to act and hold yourself up like a professional. If you don't view yourself as a professional, if you can't, when you look in the mirror, view yourself as someone who is worthy of being paid for the advice and value you can provide, no one else will ever have that view either. So it starts with yourself. And then the other part of it is, you know, you've got to be able to do it. So that's confidence, right? It's understanding that you have experience. It's putting in the time so that you know your craft extensively, right? You are a master of your trade. And beyond that, just the same way when we think about, you know, I think about my colleagues who work in other professions, and they're very quick to turn for help to others in their profession when they need it, right? Like, my wife is in the medical field. Anytime that they had a complicating issue, there was never a, like, oh, you're a stupid doctor, you're asking for a second opinion. Like, no. Same thing with my friends who are attorneys. A lot of times when they get complicated cases, they sit down and there's none of this like stigma attached to, I need a resource, right? But in the financial advisory space, sometimes it, you know, there's sort of some groups and some advisors that work in these teams and have these resources and they're available to them. And then there are these other advisors who feel like if they say, I don't know to a client, that it is like the end of the world, that they have to, like, it's not. You do have to be a specialist. You have to have a lot of knowledge, but nobody, as I said before, nobody knows everything. And you just need to build the infrastructure and resources around you so that when you have a question, you have a place where you can go where you're confident, and that's all your client wants. At the end of the day, they want you to get them to the answer, but they don't need you to have every one of them yourself.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Our two-day event that we call How to Charge Live, where advisors come and we teach them, hey, how do you get paid for your planning? And this was my story too. I was in the business for 8 to 9 years, you know, had some success on the selling kind of framework, won some trips, did the things. But the first time I positioned a financial plan, it was a 12-month financial plan for $1,500, and I swore they were going to say no. It's wild that I was like, no, I'm not worth that. And it's like, man, just my internal view of like, no, the product's the value. I'm just the bringer of the product. And it's crazy to see in this 2-day event we do where somebody comes, I've never been paid before, like a fee, to like, wow, actually, I think I'm way more valuable than I think I am. What's your kind of feedback?
And you know what? Once you get that first person to do it, you're like, okay. This is a real thing. People will pay for my expertise. And then you do it for the next person. And actually you get to a point where, you know, I think it's definitely a full circle transition where at some point down the road, it does click and you get the person who almost says, or inevitably says like, well, you know, this shop over here is willing to give me a plan for free. It's like, well, then good luck. Have fun with them. And, if and when you'd like to work with me, I will be right here and I'll be happy to work with you as well. But you know, you come full circle at some point. It starts slow where can I do this? Can I do this? And you get to the point where like, wait, I am a professional. And if you'd like to work with me, you'll pay me for my time. And if not, I will find other people who do value that. And I think that is, you know, that's the heart of any good relationship is mutual value there.
Yeah.
You are your time is the most valuable thing that you possess on this earth, right? I mean, it's such a cliched thing at this point, but until you really start to hone in on it, until you really value your time in the way that you want others to, again, it's very difficult to get others to value your time until you start doing it yourself. And I know it's hard, right? It is hard, especially as a younger advisor who's looking like, well, if I tell them they're going to be paying me for my services, what if they don't become a client? And what if I didn't charge them and they could have become a client? those are all the really the wrong questions to be asking, because it's really about, like, if this person is not going to value me, are they the right person for me to work with to begin with?
Yeah.
And yes, it might be a little bit more, maybe I lose somebody today, but they weren't the right person. And in the end, it wasn't going to be a good fit anyway. So you got to be willing to walk away, if you will, at the right time.
As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
As I hear you say that, it's like, what's my identity as an advisor? Is it, again, my time has no value in the products. The more products I can place to solve the short-term need of this person, I then will someday make enough money to not be in panic mode, to then step back and then have these realizations. Because I'm coaching and working with some advisors 20 years in, and they're just like, there's this feeling of excitement of like, wow, this is what I've been looking for. But then you can also see in them, there's this like, oh man, you know, like, I didn't do it the wrong way, but I could have been doing it different.
Yeah. I mean, and it's harder. Like, once you get used to that other model, like you're in it, you feel like, you know, you feel like this is the only way, and it's using everything else as a crutch because you don't have the confidence to do what even a lot of the advisors who are in that model feel is right. You know, so many of them I talk to, and I'm sure Sten, you feel the same way, where they're talking like, yeah, this is backwards.
Yeah.
And it does come from, it is a product that I'm glad you mentioned it, the byproduct of the way so many people get into the industry today. You know, it's very backwards. There's not another profession where you have to, well, I hate to say not another, but it shouldn't be where you have to earn enough to stick around long enough where you can learn enough, right? It should be the opposite. It should be learn first, then earn. But as an industry, we really haven't done that very well. And there has been a lot of these paths coming in for people of, hey, come try it out, see if you can sell enough. And if you do, you'll earn something. And if you earn enough, then we'll keep you around and then you can learn. And it's just, it's very, very backwards. I'm very, very grateful for the fact that today we have a lot more paths into the industry than we did 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. You know, you've got financial planning programs today at colleges, like people graduating with a major in financial planning, not economics or business. They're graduating with financial planning. You've got large firms out there and also mom and pop advisors who are saying, you know what, I want one of these young people to come in and they are going to do some work and they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to work for their education within the business. But then there's a defined path to, like, you can be a client service person and then you jump from client service person to becoming a, you know, an associate or junior wealth advisor, or put whatever term you want in it. And then from there, maybe you'll start to, you know, optionally, you know, bring in your own clients while you're helping me with some of my larger ones. And then at some point you're going to say, you know what, I think I got this. And then you're going to kind of fly the nest and go off on your own, like the, you know, and the proud advisor parent basically, right, is watching the bird fly the nest and they're off on their own, but they never had to get there because they were selling, right? At some point, they just naturally had enough information that they were able to confidently and competently go out and help people. And then instead of like trying to sell people on stuff, people were attracted to them because they were already by that point a knowledgeable professional themselves, which again, just excites me so much for the future. Yeah. And that's a trend I think is going to continue to evolve towards that road.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we had an event here the other day and I caught myself saying, you know, imagine if this is really our sales pitch. We're not saying that, but you know, hey, Jeff, good to meet you. My name's Sten. You've never met me before, but just transfer me all your money and let's hope this thing works out. Like, that is really the pitch of being an advisor to somebody. I'm like, I don't know if that would work if I flipped it the other way. I don't think I'd say yes to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a very reminiscent, that sentence of what happened to me kind of early on in that, you know, when I was mentioning these 4 weeks where I was going to this company and they said, hey, you know, great. Now bring in a list of, 100 people. I was like, wait a second. I don't know anything. And I am not a quitter, right? Once I'm in something, even if I don't really enjoy it, I'm going to kind of see it through. But that was one of those where I just kind of had this crisis of conscience. And I looked and said, who would trust me with their life savings? I certainly wouldn't do it. And that was the moment. Like, it was the biggest, like, sad feeling I've had in this business, because I just felt like I wasn't going to be able to do it. Wow. And then those fortuitous circumstances happened where I was, you know, bumped into the right people, got offered a role and whatnot. And very grateful for all those things, because I love what I do today. I mean, I would not go back. I always say, you know, other than what I do today, there's only one thing I would snap my fingers and change my careers for, and that's to become an astronaut. And I'm pretty sure that I'm past that point in my life. So everyone stuck with me in this role, I guess.
Love it. When you think about part of my framework that had to change when I was on the insurance side and then I was on the heavy investment side and kind of found my way to, you know, investments are important, insurance is great, but like, what if I got really good at talking about a process versus like the products? And I look back at like, what are the things I wish on day one somebody would have told me? One, become a great communicator. Because you could have somebody with a need and you could have the solution, but if you don't have the ability to move them and inspire them to take action, like, I didn't know that. But also it's if I can share a process with you, you'd pay for that to go through it. And if I was a young advisor that got really good at communicating a process, like this road we're talking about, I think could be faster than we think. You know, I don't think it has to take 10 years to be a junior and eventually be successful. You probably can't do it in two, you know, but maybe 3 to 4 if you really get after it. How do you handle now in your world when you talk about process systems? I'm sure you're sharing great ideas all the time, but how do you open your value prop?
So just to be clear, open the value prop for that new advisor coming in, or open the, like, or what would that advisor have as their value prop for the end client?
Curious where you are today and kind of everything you've been through and everything you've seen, your advice to other advisors on, if I met Jeff for the first time and you said, here's why you'd want me on the team. You probably have some ideas, but you probably wouldn't say, because I have access to these 4 products that no one else does.
For sure.
How do you open?
Yeah, I think it starts with who you are and what you believe in, right? So making sure that people understand that you are a specialist in a specific area. You know, again, I'm very guilty of doing something today that I normally try to not do, which is compare our industry to, you know, the medical field.
That's right,
because it's just overused. Sure. But again, you know, it just, this particular question lends itself so well to that. When, you know, I had I recently had a physical injury, excuse me. I had hurt my stomach and I wasn't going to like a general doctor. I did not want to go to see it. I mean, I'm happy to go see my GP. I love my GP, but I wanted a specialist. I was having an issue. I wanted to, you know, go there. My son, unfortunately, recently had a concussion. You know, he's a 9-year-old kid. He plays sports, and you know, young kids, concussion, you want to be careful about that. We went and we found a pediatric concussion specialist. Why? Because we want someone who speaks to our particular issue, who understands that, who's done it before. So part of that initial process is making sure that you do understand get clear on who you want to serve,
yeah,
right? Because if you're trying to serve everybody, you're serving nobody. And that is, you know, that is another hard thing for advisors initially when they're thinking about it to do, because they feel like if I say I only speak to clients who wear blue and eat spaghetti on Tuesdays, man, then I'm really limiting my potential, you know, base of clients. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, anybody who wears blue and eats spaghetti on Tuesdays now, like, wait a second, that's me. I want that. Like, I know that person, you know, like, and there's not a lot of people maybe talking to that particular person. And yeah, you could go broader. You can say retirement, or you can say, I want to help business owners. But the more specific you are, the more targeted that messaging is for that person, the more likely you're able to convert someone who steps in front of you. And that doesn't mean, and one of the things I think sometimes advisors get in their own head, that doesn't mean that if you're, you know, if you say, I work with clients who specialize, you know, who are tech entrepreneurs, it doesn't mean that the tech entrepreneur has a great friend who works in manufacturing and they refer him over and you're like, well, sorry, I only work with tech people. No, but it's like your messaging attracts your primary audience. And once you have that primary audience, they'll give you those periphery clients. You're still going to get the referrals to the friends, the family. They trust you at that point, right. Yeah. And they see the value you can provide. So, you know, getting clear on who you want to serve is number one. And then number two is having, like, what do you do for them? Like, what is your, I'm going to use the term here, deliverable, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a physical deliverable anymore, sure. Right? It's like, what are they going to get? And explain to them, like, what is the process look with you on day one, month one, year one, and decade one, right? And talk to them also in terms about, you know, plant the seed that this is a long-term relationship. So in those initial meetings, you know, casually mentioning like, well, we're doing this now and, you know, I would expect us to revisit this in another 7 or 8 years again when it's time, you know, dropping that idea that you're not in this for the short term, you're in this for the long term, and start getting the client's mind framed that way. And then finally, what I would say here is get really good. You talked about communication. I think that and psychology are the two most valuable things that an advisor can know today outside of all the, you know, the technical nitty gritty of like, what does the tax code say about this? And how do I build a diversified portfolio? And honestly, those last two, as important as they are, you know, you can find partners really easily today to help build a diversified portfolio. You can find the right people to answer those tax questions. But the one thing that nothing can replace right now, not other advisors, not other support systems, not AI, nothing is that TWC, time with client. And if you want to measure a predictive measure of your success in this business, right? If you want to look at a chart and see a strong correlation between your income and something else, it's TWC. How much time do you spend with clients? So building the team around you, getting the things in place so that you can do it, and whether it's in person or Zoom or a coffee meeting, but just those one-on-one things when you get the casual, oh, you know, this came up the other day, or by the way, you know, that's a great thought. Bob, I was just talking to Bob and he had that question. Maybe I could connect you to. Those are when those organic moments happen, and it is an incredible predictor of success in that business or this business. So spend time with the people who are most important to you in this role, and that's your clients.
That's great feedback. When we talk about those specific areas, if you could go back in time and you were saying, I'm going to get really clear on this language for a specific audience to help the people listening kind of get their brain moving, what are some that you would think of today?
Wow. I mean, we could go broad and like we said before, you could talk about retirement and business owners. We could look at family planning. There's a whole lot there, whether that be education planning or families in flux. I think also you can do it around events as well. So you can do, like, I work with newly married couples to help them solve their financial, you know, to help them, you know, marry their finances as they did their, you know, their lives or whatever. You can do divorce. You know, divorce is unfortunately another area. You could do, you know, a death. You know, these are all things that unfortunately or fortunately, depending upon the thing, of course, happen. And they're big changes. So thinking about, you know, but ultimately to me, it's like, what inspires you? What drives you? Like, what do you really enjoy as a person? Because then that's going to, you know, you asked before, how did you kind of go down this path? You know, if nobody was paying attention, I'd still be going through each one of these new laws today and diving through. Because it's just the way I'm wired. I love it. I want to know. I got to get in there. And to me, it was, if I'm going to do all this work, I might as well share it with others because I can help save them time and maybe they don't love what I love.
Yeah.
But, you know, translating that to the advisor space, like, who gives you energy? Who do you wake up in the morning and you're excited to go to the office to work with and serve? And we do. We serve our clients. We are entrusted with, you know, with, in many cases, what they've worked decades to build up. And even, you know, sometimes, I'm only working with younger couples, or I haven't gotten to the point where I'm really working with those mega dollars. That's fine. But you know what? The person with $100,000, you know, maybe they are not going to be the most lucrative client you ever have. But if that's where you are in your career right now, yeah, that $100,000 is probably more valuable to that person than $1 million or $2 million or $5 million is to some of the higher net worth clients that others might deal with. So yeah, it's a stepping stone. It's an at bat. You know, you do have to make sure that when you're working with someone, that it's good business for you. Sure. But that good business can just be, this is an at bat for me, right? Like, I need at bats. At some point, you switch and you go, okay, now I'm a starter, a starting lineup. Now I'm going to be more selective about the pitches I see, all that sort of stuff, whatever. I'm very analogy heavy this morning, Stan. I don't know why, but but you know, that to me is really important, right? Is where do you see passion? Where do you get passion? And we can then start tailoring it to, you know, in some cases you might live in an area where there's a big employer, mm-hmm, right? You could say, I work with people for this. I know advisors who have only clients who work for one company. And when I say only, I mean like 90% of their clients, right? As I said before, then they get the friends and the family, but like their targeted market is, I work with people who work at this company. And that's it, because they live in an area where there's a headquarters of a huge company and they speak very specifically to that company. Yeah. And when they want to try to get new clients, you know what they do? They say to the HR person at that company, I'd love to, you know, to do a session for you guys. I work specifically with folks from your company. Let me share with you a little bit about how this new law affects people at company, right? Like, that is a very targeted message, and you're going to get a lot more yeses than, hey, I'd like to talk to you about, some generic financial product or even strategy, when you're not speaking to an audience directly.
Yeah. Yeah, that hits home. I think I've gotten really sensitive over the years to like generic activity in this business, because it didn't serve me well early on. And I was like, this is kind of where I'm being pushed, but I don't think it's going to take me where I want to go. So when I started seeing everybody do something, I was like, maybe that's a sign not to do that. But we use what we call targeting strategies, which, as you're unpacking, is like, do I have a specific idea that helps a specific group? And if I take it to them, the close rate's much higher. And we've even had an advisor we coach that got a employee handbook from a large company and then wrote like a mini ebook that said how to retire from this company.
Yep.
It was like, you just became an authority overnight for that group of people. So I love when you're talking about like the specific language. I think that's a huge takeaway for everybody listening, of like, don't be generic, because then people don't know if you're the right person, unless they're just looking for a general solution because they just happen to have a need at that moment. But again, I don't think those odds are in our favor.
I completely agree. Yeah.
Jeff, I appreciate you, brother. I'm glad we got this. We pulled this off with your schedule, and I appreciate all you're doing. Keep cranking the content out, man.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me, and then good luck to everyone listening, and keep it going, man. Keep the good fight, and help as many people as we can, because there are so many people out there who really need a good, hardworking professional to help them, guide them in life's journey. So good luck to everyone listening, and thanks again, Stan, for having me.
Thanks, bud. Talk soon.